My name is Mike, and I'm your chairperson today, and I want to welcome you to the Arizona Area Turbocharge Your Recovery Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona Area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to help members take their recovery to the next level, or at least up a notch. So we'll open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity,
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
And Christine is going to read the preamble.
Good morning, Al-Anon family. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Now for the workshop opening, I've asked Joanne to read that for us.
Our first Al-Anon meeting gave many of us a feeling of hope and the realization we were not alone. Hearing such slogans as easy does it and one day at a time helped us to see that there had been others before us who understood what we had lived through. It was a struggle in the beginning to focus on anything except the alcohol. But gradually, as we attended more meetings and began to listen, we found it easier to break through our barrier of denial, to concentrate on what other members were saying. As more time passed, we were able to widen our focus and look at our group. We wanted to ensure that our group continued to flourish in a healthy manner. When we heard about the 12 traditions and what they meant to the group unity, we came to realize that most of the time, our group was practicing the traditions. Like the 12 steps, the traditions began to seem familiar. Their wisdom was applicable to our group and to our own personal lives. Some of us were in Al-Anon or Alateen for years before we ever heard about the 12 concepts of service. At this point in our recovery, many of us could think clearly most of the time, keep an open mind some of the time, and allow others to give their opinions occasionally. After considering these ideas, it is but a small step further for us to wonder if the concepts play a useful part in our group lives. The answer is yes. Whether a group is flourishing well or beset by problems, the concepts provide a vital link to the service experiences of others. Once again, we realize that we are not alone. Others have experienced similar problems and met them with understanding and compassion.
Thank you, Joanne. And I've asked Paul to read the May reading from When I Got Busy, I Got Better. Thank you, Paul.
Hi, I'm Paul, a member of Al-Anon. May reading. Fear of failure, fear of success. Fear of failure. Sometimes responsibility brings up a fear more disconcerting than that of simply making mistakes. The fear of failure. What if I forget my story when it's my turn to share? What if I lose our literature, break out our coffee pot, alienate my group, or lose our treasury? Alcoholism has given me a high level of creativity. When left to my own devices to spin fantasies of disaster. What I learned through Al-Anon service is that others want to see me succeed. Certainly, my higher power is always with me and is always willing to encourage my success. My group too supports my efforts. I've also learned that the fate of my group doesn't rest in my hands, but rather in the hands of a higher power who is not me. Help is always available. Fear of success. What if I volunteered to help out and succeeded? I didn't want to feel responsible for the welfare of my group. What if I began to dominate the affairs of my group or became distracted from my own recovery by our deliberations about business? And might I not lose a healthy sense of humility if people started looking at me for guidance? My fear of success sprang from my experience with alcoholism and feeling that doing a job well meant sacrificing my own happiness. I discovered in Al-Anon that my fear of dominance was a good guarantee I wouldn't be domineering, and that taking a hand in group affairs furthered my own recovery instead of derailing it. I also discovered that I could grow in self-esteem without losing humility. I could enjoy making a contribution without feeling that I alone could provide guidance. Most important, in helping others, as in the rest of my program, Al-Anon urged me to let go. Part of extending a hand is eventually letting go and noticing when my job is done, there are more hands willing and able to carry on. From when I got busy, I got better, page 5-6. Copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, Incorporated, 1994.
Let's see. We are just about ready to get started with our speakers. Each of our three panelists will share for 15 minutes, and the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly brief shares. Remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. Thank you. Okay, now I'd like to introduce our first speaker. This is Melody G. Melody G has just been a tower of service since I have known her. She has really helped me in so many ways when I've had questions about Al-Anon. And I am really looking forward to hearing what she has about service. So Melody, you are on.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Melody. Thank you, Mike, for asking me to speak and for that lovely introduction. And thank you to all the committee members who are putting this workshop on today. This topic is a good one for me today. I've been distracted quite a bit this week, and I have not prepared for this workshop as I would have liked to have. I did prepare some. I read through the reading from When I Got Busy, I Got Better a few times. I read through some questions that the committee suggested I answer as part of my talk, but my mind was drawing a blank. I normally like to have an idea of at least where I'm going to start and what direction I'm going to go into, but it just wasn't coming to me. And last night I began to get into a lot of anxiety, and the question started to go through my head. Well, what if I have nothing to say? What if I think of something and then forget? What if I don't address the topic? What if I'm just babbling? What if people think I'm an idiot? Why did they ask her to speak? You know, it just went on and on. And what if I can't fill 15 minutes? So this morning I was out on the back porch having my breakfast and doing my prayer and meditation, and I invited God to sit with me and to give me the words to say. That's you know, my last resort always, and maybe it should be my first resort. Turn to God, and because when I speak, that's really who's speaking through me, is my higher power. And right, so I invited him to sit with me. And the first thing he said was, well, why don't you share this experience that you're having right here, right now? And I thought, yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. So here I am. I got in the shower after that, and the words just started to flow from me. Hopefully I'll remember at least half of them. So service was the first tool in Al-Anon that I picked up at my second meeting. I got there early. The woman who had the key to the church was there. She was setting things up, and she allowed me to help her set up the chairs and the literature. And I didn't know how the group did that. And so I asked her, and she showed me. She showed me how to put, where to put the chairs and how to set them in a circle and where to put the literature. And I just felt so respected and so accepted and so honored by her allowing me to participate in that way. It wasn't a feeling I had ever experienced anywhere else in my life, and I wanted more of that. And so I just kept going back early every week so I could help her set up. Eventually, she asked me if I wanted to lead the meeting. Well, I didn't know how to lead the meeting. And she said, that's okay. I'll sit here next to you and I'll help you. If you get stuck, you just, you know, read this, these papers. And after about 10 months of going to that meeting, she was the GR and she needed to step down. And so she started asking for somebody else to step up. And I was kind of interested. I didn't know, really know what a GR, group representative, was. But I knew there was these monthly meetings that they went to. And I thought, well, maybe that was a way to meet more people. But I was filled with fear and I just didn't know what to expect. And she said, well, I'll go to a meeting, or you can come to a meeting with me and I can show you, you know, what to do. And so I went with her and she introduced me to people and showed me the back table where they kept all the copies of the flyers and said, you know, you need to pick up all this stuff, and sat with me through the meeting and kind of just let me know what was going on. And so I volunteered to be the GR. And when it was time to go to assembly, she said, well, I'll go with you as long as you drive. She didn't like to drive on the freeway. So off we went. I drove. And she, again, you know, introduced me to people. There were people there that I had met through the AIS meetings and my own home group. And she sat with me and just guided me through the whole process of the area assembly. The woman I asked to be my sponsor was someone I met at an AIS meeting. She just glowed with joy and serenity when she walked in the room, and I wanted that. And I'm so grateful that I asked her to be my sponsor, because service was a cornerstone of her recovery. She did a lot of service work and was a great example to me in that way. And I'm grateful for that, because service work is a cornerstone of my recovery too, as well. And she was always there to encourage me and support me, and still, you know, is to this day. Now she lives in California now. And this past year that we've been on Zoom, I've been telling her, you know, every time I've been asked to speak at a meeting or participate in a workshop, I tell her about it, and she comes. She's there to support me and listen. And I know I can always count on her to start a discussion or share, you know, at a workshop if nobody else is wanting to talk, because that's just what she does and what she always has done. And she sets that example. So I in turn do that for the people that I sponsor as well. She provides me with somebody that I can go to ask questions. She's done all the positions I have done. She did them ahead of me. So she knew a lot of the answers to my questions. She also, you know, provides me with an opportunity to vent when I'm having difficulties, or helps me to reason things out and apply the traditions and the principles and the concepts. So she's been a very valuable resource to me on my service journey. So I have never had to do service alone. There's just always been other people there to do it with me and to help me. The WSO also has guidelines for many different, like a GR, a DR, a public outreach coordinator, things like that. They're a tremendous resource. The service manual is a must-have resource. The area and AISs have guidelines for their different positions. So there's all kinds of resources out there, as well as other members that have helped me through my journey in service. Early on, I had opportunities. I was involved in a lot of events, workshops, fundraisers, fellowship events, conventions. Sometimes I would chair the committees or chair, you know, a portion of it. And my thing was always, you know, perfection. Everything had to go right. I would get into all this anxiety and more questions about, well, what if this happens and what if that happens? And I got to make sure this person does that. And I got, you know, I just wanted it to be perfect. But I learned to take my higher power with me. I grabbed him by the hand on the way out the door, and he sat in the car with me and gave me some sort of comfort. And it took a while to learn how to really, you know, trust in him. And inevitably, something would go wrong. No matter how hard I tried, something would go wrong. And I would just beat myself up over it. And I would think, okay, next time I got to make sure that doesn't happen, but I got to do this and I got to do that. Well, eventually I came to understand that the goal was not to be perfect. The goal was to learn how to handle adversity with dignity and grace, because something is always going to go wrong. It is inevitable. And that's true in life in general. Life happens. And the question is, how am I going to respond? Am I going to respond with insanity or some dignity and some grace? And so those events taught me how to do that. And it helped me to let go of my anxiety and my need for perfection. I was, as a GR, I at some point volunteered to be the public outreach coordinator, which was not what I wanted to do when I went to the AIS elections that night. But nobody else wanted to do it. The first time they you know, voted on that position, nobody stood. And so then they went on through all other positions and came back around. And it's just, it was such a big job. And I had never had any kind of a coordinator position. But as I was sitting there, my heart was pounding and I could feel my sponsor's eyes in the back of my neck. She was sitting behind me. And so I stood up for the position, and everybody was all happy. Oh, yeah, we have a public outreach coordinator. Well, I used that to put a lot of pressure on myself. Like, oh, I've got to do a good job and I've got to do it right. And it was actually a job where I had to work through a lot of fears. I was way out of my comfort zone. The idea of talking with professionals, and that just, you know, terrified me. And public outreach is one where you have to come up with ideas and be creative, and I don't have any good ideas. But it's not a job that a person can do alone. It's a big job. And so I managed to put together a committee, which was way out of my comfort zone as well. And we worked on things together. I did, you know, work through my fears of talking to professionals. We put on some fundraisers for public outreach. That's some of those events where I was talking about where I just wanted things to be perfect. And, you know, my sponsor was there to support me through all of it. And I don't even remember so much of it at this point, but people said I was doing a good job. So I guess I did a good job, and I did something. It was better than nobody being in the position. And, you know, in Al-Anon, that's good enough a lot of times. So, which is very comforting. Over the years, I've had opportunities to chair committees, which is another thing that's just out of my comfort zone. I always thought of myself as a follower, not a leader. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. I've also been somebody that I prefer to work by myself. I prefer to just be able to do it my way, and I can do it faster, and I don't have to deal with other people's opinions and personalities. But committee work is the opposite of all of that. But I did learn that I do have leadership ability, which was a great boost to my self-esteem. I also learned that I am just one among many, that everybody who comes to the table has something of value to give. And it is the sum total of all of that value that makes the event success. It's not just the success. It's not just one person. It's not just the chairperson or that makes it a success. And so that really helps me to keep my humility in check. I learned that good ideas can come from anywhere, and I need to be open to that. And And so those were really good growth experiences for me. There was a question in the reading about have there been times when service has gotten in the way of your happiness? And I laugh. It makes me laugh. Just as it's inevitable that things will go wrong, conflict is inevitable. We are human beings. It's just part of being a human. And there has been numerous times over the years when there has been conflict, and it doesn't make me very happy. But they have been such great growth experiences for me. It's been opportunities for me to look at my behavior, my attitudes, my perceptions, how I treat people, how I want to be treated, what's not acceptable to me. It's given me opportunities to extend grace to other people, to learn how to do that, to accept others as they are, to be open to different perspectives. And when I am able to be a part of a group that does work through that conflict and reach unity, you know, tradition one tells me that unity, that progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. And so I have a responsibility to utilize the traditions and the concepts and the principles to do my part in working through that conflict and achieving unity so that we can go forward, we can get past that and go forward. And when I've been able to do that, or I've been a part of a group of people that have been able to do that, there's no greater joy in my life than to experience that, or to see other people, to see my sponsees work through conflicts in their life and get to the other side of it and see their face light up from that. That brings joy to my heart as well. So service work has just been a tremendous gift. I cannot ever say enough about it. It has helped me so much in my personal recovery and in my home life. And I am so grateful to be here today and for this opportunity to share. And I'm so very grateful to my higher power this morning for giving me these words to share with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Melody. That was great. And let's give Melody a nice round of applause with jazz hands. Thank you again. Remember, if you have any questions that you would like to direct toward Melody about her participation in service in Al-Anon and her recovery, please send those in a private chat to Flo Ann. Our next speaker is Phil B. Oh boy, I don't have enough words. Every time I think of Phil, it puts a smile on my face. He has a great program. I always enjoy hearing his words, and I am so looking forward to hear about how service has been a part of his recovery in Al-Anon. Thank you, Phil. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Phil, also known as Phil. Which you'll hear about in a second. But, I'm going to hit my timer. Just sitting here, something tells me Mike has some kind of motive here to get me more involved in service. I think this is like some sneaky way of Mike's to engaging me more in service. I don't know, some weird feeling coming over me, but we'll see. I don't know if there's an ulterior motive there or not. Since today's, we had I've spoken several times about my story, and that's usually easy enough for me to do. But speaking specifically on a specific topic was kind of a new journey for me. So I really did have to sit down and think about what I wanted to share and put some thoughts together, and I kind of did do that. I'll talk about my singing my name real quick just before I forget about it. There's lots of different ways to do service, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them. But as we all know, most of us. Oh, and by the way, there's so many familiar faces here, and there's some new faces, people I don't know, and so I'm grateful to meet those of you which I do not know or have not met in the rooms over the years. And so I want to thank you for being here. It's really great to see some familiar faces and some new faces. One day I was walking into a meeting and I was pretty upset, and I just didn't feel great. And some higher power told me to sing and that it would make me feel better. It's kind of like if you're smiling, it's pretty difficult to be pissed off when you're smiling. It's also, you know, kind of hard to be angry when you're laughing. And very similarly, if you're singing, it's kind of challenging to be angry and pissed off if you're singing. And so I just decided that morning that I was going to sing my name when I introduced myself at that Al-Anon meeting. And it had the greatest response in the room that you would not believe. Everybody just kind of mostly laughed at me. But then a lot of smiles and a lot of happiness and you know, it was like, and then so many people, you know, came up to me after and were like, wow, that, what'd you do that for? And, you know, that boy, that made me smile. And, you know, that was really great. And it was just so many comments. And I just kept doing it after that. I just continually at that one meeting, my Sunday morning group meeting, I would just sing my name every time I introduced myself. And I have pretty much for a long time now. And I'll just never forget, we lost a member this year. His name was Mark. And Mark used to come up to me almost before every meeting that we were both at together and just say to me, don't ever stop singing your name. He said, I can't tell you how much, you know, your singing your name at the beginning of a meeting has affected me, you know, throughout my time here in Al-Anon, you know. And, you know, Mark suffered from depression amongst them, you know, some other things. And, you know, and he would always be sure to tell me that I just put a smile on his face. And, you know, so for me, that was service, you know, like singing my name is service. Something as simple as singing my name to open a meeting and putting a smile on somebody's face is service for me. And, you know, service can be that simple, or it can be, you know, a whole long list of acronyms that, you know, we put behind our names, you know, that involve a whole bunch of time and energy. So I just wanted to put that out there. You know, I did prepare, as the previous speaker talked about, and kind of trying to get ready for the meeting. So I did some of the reading and looked at the questions, blah, blah, blah. So for me, you know, the first thing I read was about the my first meeting, right? And so at my first meeting, service was evident to me everywhere. There were people there who obviously were doing service by hugging me and welcoming me and making me feel, embracing me and making me feel okay, because I wasn't. At my first meeting, I was bawling the whole meeting. I think I had tears in my eyes for 59 of the 60 minutes I was at that meeting. And I was a hot mess. I was a real hot mess. And, you know, people were doing a lot of service that night because they got me to come back, because they welcomed me and embraced me, and I felt okay. And that's what made me come back. And that's service. I got a really strong sense of fellowship that night. And, you know, fellowship is service. You know, the fact that I feel a part of something, you know, my whole life, most of my life, I didn't, you know, I felt alone. I've lived most of my life like alone. You know, I can be in a freaking room full of people, you know, a concert hall, 10,000 people, and feel alone. I'm just that kind of person. And my whole life, I've kind of struggled with thinking I've got to do it alone. I've got to get it done alone. I am alone. Nobody loves me. I'm not supported. And coming into Al-Anon was the greatest gift for me, because this whole concept of fellowship, which is service, you know, I felt loved. I felt embraced. I have made such good friends here. It's unbelievable. You know, truer friends than I've ever had. I mean, you guys 100% are my family, 100%. My family of origin has nothing on you guys. You know, you guys have been there for me in the greatest ways. It's just been unbelievable. So that sense of fellowship, very from my very first meeting, you know, it was just unbelievable. Just really, really did the job, got me coming back. And that first meeting, I also learned about higher power, which I really had, you know, not a concept of that in as a definition, you know, as a something to be defined. But I won't get into it because I could talk for 45 minutes about higher power, obviously. I have always had a strong higher power. So from the time I was like 10 years old, I had like a spiritual awakening at that age, believe it or not. And I just always knew I had a higher power. I've always known I've had a higher power. I've always been able to talk to my higher power. I've always felt like my higher power is protecting me and guiding me. And so Al-Anon, when they brought up this concept of higher power, you know, really, it just made a lot of sense to me. Just all kind of came together. And I was able to, at that point, really, you know, put it all together and start defining what that meant for me. And, you know, it's been incredible. And this, you know, so how that relates to service and, you know, my first meeting is, you know, I had this higher power. I kind of knew about it, but it was at my first meeting that I kind of realized what that all meant, and how it could help me in my recovery. And that was really truly awesome. And a lot of great, you know, all because of service. So my very first year in Al-Anon, I don't even think I was 6 months in. And my group that I was going to, I started out at the Pantano Monday night group, you know, which it is what it is. But that's the first meeting I ever went to. And the people there were lovely and got me coming back and everything. And Michael, who was very strong at that meeting, asked me to be the literature chair for the annual conference that year. And I wasn't, I mean, I must've been 6 months in and I had no clue what she was asking me to do. And everybody just kept telling me, oh, you got it. You know, there's no right or wrong way. And, there's no musts in Al-Anon and, you know, you just do, you know, we'll help you. And so I came to find out what you know, all you have to do is go to the office and pick up the brochures and literature and bring them to the conference and set them up in the room, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the truth is, at the end of the day, it really was that simple. And that's what I did. And doing that and being asked to do that, I met a lot of people. I got to the conference my first year. I was engaged. You know, it was the greatest form of service. Was to ask me to do some service, right? You know, so I was grateful to Michael for asking me to do that. And, you know, and I was grateful for the opportunity to do it. It was pretty cool. And all the way around, everything about it was awesome. And I'll just say, a quick funny about it, really. And it kind of gave me some insight into the fact that, you know, we're all here for a reason. And it's not because we were feeling really good every day and that we don't have any kind of, you know, character defects. But anyhow, the little rack for the brochures that, you know, we used to have. And so, you know, it holds about 24 brochures or whatever. And I was getting ready to set it up or setting it up in the room there at the conference. And this other Al-Anon came in and she just had her way of setting up that rack. She just knew exactly what order those brochures needed to be in. And she just, you know, and it was my first opportunity to kind of use my whatever recovery I had at that point to kind of back off, let her do the rack, you know, set it up. I, you know, even though I'd been told there were no musts or rights or wrongs, boy, there wasn't that moment. But I was my first real opportunity to put what little kind of tools I already had into place and let her put the rack up. So, and I did that, and that was pretty cool. You know, I got a taste of what having some recovery and some tools, you know, of the program could do for me in the rest of my life. You know, I will say, just because it's on my tongue, that, you know, Al-Anon has changed my entire freaking life. You know, it's not just in, it's just not with my alcoholic. It's just not with, you know, dealing with alcoholism or my own personal recovery. I have, this program has put me on a spiritual path that I will forever be grateful for my entire life. I get up and meditate every single morning and have for the last 3.5 years, haven't missed a morning. I have tools to use with my kids, with my wife, with my work, my coworkers, with my partners at the grocery store, driving my car, you name it. This program of Al-Anon has changed how I view my entire life and how I act and what I do and what I think. And, you know, it goes well beyond dealing with my alcoholic. As a matter of fact, my alcoholic's my wife, and so I have to deal with her every day. But you know, I use Al-Anon way more on other aspects of life than I do on my alcoholic, you know. So that's been pretty cool for me. So showing up to meetings is service. You know, I feel like I'm in service when I go to a meeting. You know, we needed a treasurer at the Sunday morning group there at one point, and nobody was raising their hand, and it was kind of bad timing for me, but I decided to do it anyway. And that was my real first formal kind of heavy position that I ever took on. And being the treasurer was an awesome experience for me. I do like numbers. I was okay with spreadsheets. You know, I took it on, and I had a lot of fear about it. You know, I had a lot of fear about signing up for that responsibility, but I did it for 3 years. It went really well. It was a great opportunity for me to kind of get involved and be engaged in a lot of different levels. And I really, really enjoyed it. Not right around when I took on that treasurership, but one of my good friends was in charge of the entertainment at the conference that year. And she asked me and my sponsor to some of you may have been there. It was a Wizard of Oz skit, and my sponsor and I were Dorothy I was the straw man or whatever that is. And, you know, I'm no actor and I'm not good with, I have a horrible memory, but we had a lot of fun with that. And that was service, getting up on that stage and making a complete fool out of myself. And, you know, being the entertainment for you all that night was really good for me. And, you know, just saying yes to that, you know, I've been taught, you know, so my whole life been a yes man, right? You know, it's part of my disease, you know, and get it done, get it. You know, the person who asked me to do the entertainment, she always talks about how she was taught to get it done right, and get it done right now. And that was kind of my pattern throughout life, you know, just to get things done. And I had to always do it by myself. And I had to always say yes, and I had to fix things. I was the fixer, you know, and so, you know, understanding that about myself. And so for a long time, there goes my buzzer. So for a long time, you know, I had trouble, you know, not saying yes, you know. So at one point in my life, I got to the point where I had to teach myself how to say no, that no was a complete sentence. And I did that for a long time too. So coming into Al-Anon, but I was kind of told to say yes. You know, if I was asked to do something, the answer was yes. And I kind of accepted that for a while. And, you know, I've tried to do that in Al-Anon so that I can, you know, be available for service when I need to be. So I've done a lot of service in a lot of other areas of my life other than Al-Anon. And so I just wanted to talk for 2 seconds about comparing those two. You know, I've done a lot of nonprofit work. And so we're talking about parliamentary procedures and, you know, being on a board and, you know, all of that Rogers rules and, you know, you name it. And that was a very different experience than Al-Anon has presented me. And it's been interesting. And I do attend our business meetings for the Sunday morning group as much as I can. And that whole, way we do things. And most of you, I'm preaching to the choir, you know, it's interesting. The people who need to hear about service aren't here today, by the way. You know, I'm just saying, you know, we're all, you know what I'm saying. And it's interesting stuff. So let's see, what else did I kind of want to talk about here? Fear of failure, you know, was a big part of the what we're talking about here today. And I just wanted to say, you know, like, it's been kind of my, it's one of my main mottos. You know, Wayne Gretzky said, you'll miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And so, you know, and I'm Jewish. My rabbi used to tell me, you know, the same thing, like, you know, don't be afraid to fail. You know, it's your failures that are opportunities to grow and develop and learn. And so I look at fail. I don't ever fail anymore. I don't have fear of failure because I'm not afraid to fail, because my failures aren't failures. That they're growth opportunities. And so I kind of look at life that way anymore. And that's really helped me quite a bit. And so I force myself, if I do get into fear about something, to just jump in and take the shot, because there's always a lesson to be learned. There's always something positive that's going to come out of that. I like to live in the problem and the solution, and, you know, service is a part of the solution, right? And so if we, you know, jumping into service is definitely a way for us to be part of the solution. And it kind of has always been a way for me to kind of forget about. It's a good distraction. Service is a great distraction from the problem. And I'll just end with saying that, you know, Alan, the greatest gift Al-Anon has given me has been that I have gotten to know and love myself in a way that it's just been so significant, that it's changed my entire life. And it's, I thank all of you, from that very first meeting that I went to embracing me and having me come back and encouraging me, to being my friends and hugging me and loving on me. And it's through this program and through my fourth step, and my fifth step and my great sponsor, that I've been able to become, to come to know and love myself and know that I am enough. I'm more than enough, and that I do deserve to be loved. And that's been a really amazing gift. You know, in the beginning, you asked us to talk about our resources, and I'll just list them off real quick. But the Blueprint for Progress was an enormous resource for me when I did my fourth step. And I wrote a book. It took me 18 months to do my fourth step. And I actually hand typed it, and I have it in a spiral bound. I took it to Kinko's and had it spiral bound. I was OCD about that thing, but I love it. It changed my life, actually, doing the fifth step with my sponsor. Actually, 100% changed my life. That's when recovery kicked in for me. And then the daily readers, I don't miss a day. I do it every day. I read Courage and One Day at a Time, do it every morning. And I do daily 10th and 11th steps. So I, like I said, I don't miss a day of meditation, and I try in the evening to do a really strong, you know, I do it before I go to bed. So sometimes I fall asleep, but my 10th step, where I just kind of review my day and how it went. I love you all. Mike, thanks for getting me here. You know, I'll try and say yes. And thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Really appreciate your experience, strength, and hope. And no, I don't have any hidden motive yet. remember, if you do have any questions for Phil or Melody, please send those in a private chat to Floanne. And let's give Phil a nice jazz hands of appreciation. Really appreciate it, Phil. Our final speaker this morning is Susan S.
Yay.
Susan is just, when I think of Susan, I think of fun. And I know, Susan, that may be kind of funny for Susan to hear, but I just think of her smile. I think of the progress she has. She's just an example of great progress in this program and what this program can do for us. And I am just really excited to hear about what she has to share on how service has helped her recovery. Susan.
Thank you. So this is terrifying for me because it's the first time I've ever spoken. And also, as I will explain, this is one of the hardest things for me to do. And I'm going to read because, you know, what if I forget my story when it's my time to share? Or what if I freeze up? So, again, thanks for asking me to be a speaker today, because this is an opportunity to face one of my most humongous challenges. I'm completely blown away by people who can just get on and speak. It is so, I'm an expressive person, but because I'm an artist, so I can express with color and paint and singing, but not with my words. So speaking and even writing is so completely out of my comfort zone that if it was anywhere else but in Al-Anon, I would have easily said no, despite the fact that saying no is one of the hardest things for me to do. So I wrote this down. I grasp for words often. I use the wrong ones. I skip thoughts and segues that can make me pretty hard to follow. And I freeze up from insecurities about this. However, I love being helpful. I love trying new things, and I even love challenges. So I said yes to this, even though I'm quaking in my boots. I like to strengthen the muscles that are not so developed. I was relatively new to Al-Anon when our district rep asked somebody to be a volunteer, to volunteer as a GR. And because I like to help, I said yes, having no idea what was required. And when I found out, I nearly had a heart attack. So I had trouble in school if it was anything besides art class. And I was actually ridiculed in elementary school and in junior high, separated from all my friends and put in special classes. And you can hear my voice that had a profound effect on my self-esteem. Fortunately, I had some teachers throughout school that would let me do paintings and drawings instead of writing papers. So I did develop a little confidence in myself. And it wasn't until art school that I started seeing that I actually wasn't stupid, because I was seeing other people like me. I mean, I literally had gone through life thinking I was stupid. And I even had developed a stammer because I was just so afraid of speaking. When I was 34, my perfectionist father, who had been so frustrated by me, signed me up at a nearby college that had opened up for learning disabled people. He signed me up to get tested. And we both learned that I actually had a good brain, but it worked differently. But it's taken a long time chipping away at my insecurity around that. And service is I won't say a nail in the coffin, but it's been a huge chunk in my growth. I am not naturally organized. My thinking is often really scrambled. It's just my head's in the clouds. That's just how I am as an artist. Also, another big issue for me is that 21 years ago, I got Lyme disease and a brain tumor. And ever since then, I have migraines every single ding-dong day. And not only do I have shame around it, I have shame around it because, migraines don't just cause pain. They cause confusion and fatigue even before the pain starts. And so my head is really in the clouds a lot. And I don't always have the most crystal clear thinking, and reading becomes nearly impossible. I had to be forcibly tutored in elementary school to to learn how to read, or I would have been flunked out of the second grade. You know, I just, my brain works differently. So all of these things, the pain, the confusion, the less effective reading skills and organization skills I had, they made me not so confident when I found out about what was required by a GR. I feared the time commitment due to my lack of physical and mental stamina. I feared all the emails that I would have to read and answer. I just get overwhelmed, both from pain and tiredness and insecurity. Sometimes I'm too fatigued to read. And I really feared the embarrassment of being found out, of being found out that I'm disorganized, of being found out that it takes me 10 times longer to read something. But this program, holy mackerel, this program has tools that are so incredible. One of the slogans that has been the most important to me was progress, not perfection. And also what other people think is none of my business. So what if I'm spacey? You know, so what if I'm not the most professional GR in the world or the most organized person? You know, until Al-Anon, I just criticized myself all the time, worried all the time how I was perceived, what other people thought of me. Did they think I was stupid? Oh my God, they thought I was a space cadet, you know, or a flake. Also, our district rep was so sweet and had so much program under her belt. And when I voiced my insecurities about being a GR, she kept reminding me that whatever I did was fine. Like someone else mentioned, there are no wrongs or rights. Whatever I could do was good enough. And besides, no one else had volunteered. So it was like, whatever I did was better than nothing, you know? So, and members actually started to thank me for my service. And I had never been thanked for anything I wasn't good at. You know, I was thanked for just trying. And that was amazing. That was a first. And they accepted what I could do with gratitude. And I started relaxing and I around what I had to do. And I also started respecting and celebrating my willingness to take it on and to stick with it. And I made mistakes. I would get to business meetings, forget we were having them. And people would remind me how to do it. And I would, you know, I would have notes and I'd forget I had the notes. People were just so patient with me. You know, nobody else was doing the work, but also in this program, we were encouraged to not judge or criticize. And, you know, that was so healing to me. Let's see. So also I found out that I had to go to assemblies, and driving is a real huge issue for me. I'm sure you can guess why. And I was still ashamed. I was still ashamed of my deficiencies or my weaknesses or whatever you want to call them. And I was ashamed that driving was such an issue, but I got better at asking for help. And when my first assembly came up, I admitted to somebody that I don't want to drive. And it was no big deal. I wasn't criticized for not being comfortable driving. And I got a ride, and that was it. I got a ride, and we got to talk in the car, and we sang, and this person that I'd never hung out with before, we were like best buddies. It was so much fun. And then I got to the assembly, and there was a room of people, a huge room of people who were also volunteering, but because of the principles of Al-Anon, weren't gonna fire me because I wasn't a professional GR. It was just the fact that I got there and was willing was good enough. I can't tell you how new and healing that was for me. I've learned to do what I can do and leave it at that, that's enough. The greatest piece of my recovery in Al-Anon is that I have stopped beating myself up. I would say 99% of the time. That's just huge. Coming, you know, having just judged myself incessantly until the program, you know, I'll still feel funky about a mistake I made, but I'm telling you, doing this job as GR, and just being accepted for what I could do was incredible. Also, our DR finished her term in the panel, and we didn't have one, and I volunteered to be DR on top, and guess what? It was too much, and I said no. And that was the first time that I didn't beat myself up for saying no, because I had heard over and over and over again that no is a complete sentence. I didn't have to explain that my elderly mother had just moved to Tucson. I didn't have to explain anything. This is the first time I've ever explained about my reading issues or my headache. I don't have to, but you know, this is a chance to tell my story and how much I've recovered. What I've learned, what I watch myself doing is at AIS meetings, when I hear somebody mention that there's a position open, I've learned to sit on my hands and not volunteer for every single thing that comes up just because it's needed. What I'm doing is okay. That's so new to me. It's really so new. So I'm on a committee for the convention now, and I'm a little nervous. I'm looking forward for a chance to practice not panicking as it gets closer. Michelle's laughing because panic and anxiety, performance anxiety is such a huge thing for me. And I do feel cushioned and buoyed by the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of service. Like I'm not gonna get criticized, and people are gonna let me speak and not interrupt. And you know, things may get heated, things may get passionate, but that's okay. I'm relaxing about other people, and I'm relaxing about myself. We'll see. We'll see how flipped out I get when July comes. So I actually, let me take a sip.
2 minutes.
Okay, let's see if I can, I had no idea it would take that long. I became a sponsor 6 months ago, and I think I'm gonna cheat because this person says it so much better than what I could say. One day I received a call from a newcomer to Al-Anon. We chatted for a while, and then he asked if I would consider being his sponsor. I was shocked. I never expected anyone to ask me. I felt deeply humbled and ecstatically grateful at the same time. But had I grown sufficiently to offer help to someone else? Did I have anything to give? Could I be there for someone else without losing myself? Fear took over for a minute, but then I remembered that he was not asking me to be his savior, only his helper. whose example and experience might lead him to his own recovery. I know that my higher power brings people into my life who can help me to grow. So I said a quick prayer, asking to be worthy, and answered that I would be honored to be his sponsor. Being a sponsor is as much commitment to myself as it is to someone else. It is not a favor. Sponsorship gives me a chance to share intimately, to care, to practice detaching with love, and to apply the Al-Anon principles more consciously, and I'll say consistently, than ever. And if I listen to my own words, I find that I usually tell those whom I sponsor exactly what I myself need to hear. Give what you have to someone, it may be better than you dare to think. So thank you. I hope that's timing wise okay. Thanks, Michelle. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, thank you, Susan. That was really great. I really appreciate you saying yes in spite of how you felt. So a big jazz hands applause for Susan. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Great job by everybody. Let's take a moment to thank all of our speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope by giving them the American Sign Language clap with jazz hands. All right. Well, I'm now going to turn it over to our moderator, Flo Ann, to use the rest of the time to get your questions answered. And I'm sure she has gotten several because this has been three great speakers. All right, Flo Ann.
Thanks, Mike. Wow, right? Such great shares. So thank you all so much for saying yes when you were asked to speak on this topic. I do have a few questions from our membership, and I'll let you know who the question is for or if it's open to all of you. Please keep your answers brief to about 2 minutes. We only have about 20 minutes left, so we can get to as many questions as possible. All right, so let us see. There we go. And the questions that we have, we had two come in that were almost similar. So I'm going to start with that one, those, and kind of combine it all together. The first question, and we're going to start with Phil, and then we'll go to Melody, and then Susan, because it was, they did say, ask all of you. So the first part or first question was, sometimes I feel like good work is punished with more work, especially at my job. My sponsor says sometimes it's okay to say no instead of volunteering for everything, but that sounds really hard. How did you learn how to say no when your schedule just couldn't take on anymore? And then the second question that came in was, when do you know to say no to service? When do you realize that you've stepped into far too much? So we'll start with Phil and then Melody and then Susan.
It really hasn't quite happened to me yet. Now I've been overwhelmed quite a bit with stuff that I've taken on. And as I said in my talk, you know, I am this person, and it was my go-to default. And I had to get to a place where I learned to say no. And then I took that to the other extreme. For several years there, no was the first. Oops, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Did you not hear anything I said?
Maybe like the first sentence or two.
Okay, sorry. I'll make it real quick. I used to be the yes person, like I said in my talk. Then it went the other extreme, became the no person. Now I just know if I feel in my gut that that I'm overwhelmed or it's going to be too much, I really just say, you know, in order to take care of myself, I got to say no. And I'm sorry. I don't hesitate to say no anymore. I really do. Just kind of got to take care of me. My serenity and my recovery is really important.
Hi, Melody. You know, I had the same problem in my job. The more work you got, and it wasn't very much of a payoff, but, and I do experience that kind of in Al-Anon too. And I'm kind of guilty of when I'm asking other people to be of service, it's, you know, it's easy to gravitate, towards those that have already been of service or are being of service. So I try to be mindful of that. The biggest problem I have is with sponsorship and being asked to be, a sponsor. And I have a hard time saying
no to that. But somehow God always takes care of it, takes care of my time. Sometimes I have to pray. This last year that we've been on Zoom, it became a little too time consuming. But I asked for help, and God showed me how to rearrange my schedule better so that it wasn't, so that I had more time to myself. And it's been very helpful just rearranging my schedule and still being able to say yes to people. And there have been times when I have said no to service positions, and I just follow my gut and my instinct mostly. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan, and if it weren't for the silver lining of being sick, it would have taken me a longer time to learn how to say no. But there were many years where I couldn't do a thing. I mean, I was just surviving. And so for me, I'm exploring taking on more, and taking on more with a bit more calm and with the ability to say, ooh, I'm not, right now it's not working. Timing. I'm learning about, that whole thing about halt and pause. That has been really crucial, because one minute I could be okay, but if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, I won't be. And so those have helped me say no to either taking on another sponsor, or if a sponsor is calling me up or texting me and asking if I'm available. Sometimes I'm not. And it has also been helpful in not taking on too many service positions, because that was my default before this program. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan. Oh, those are great answers. I also got another one, and this one is directed at Phil, but I think I'm going to open it up for everyone because it's a great question. We'll start with you, Phil, and then we'll go Susan and Melody with this one. How did you get over your fear of failure?
Yeah, so really good question. In my early 20s, I lost my father when I was 19. My father was like this, I had him up on this pedestal. He was just this amazing person. And what happened to me was that because he was such an amazing person, I wanted to be him, and I couldn't be, especially at 19 or even in my early 20s, go from the person I was to the person he was. And so, I had to learn how to take steps towards success. And so that's when I first learned, kind of climbing a ladder, one step at a time. And I would make small, obtainable goals for myself so that I could reach them real quick, and that would give me some success and self-esteem, and I would feel good, and I'd be able to take the next step on the ladder. And eventually, so that whole process, that whole thing around the grief, around the loss of my father at a really early age, taught me how to not, I might slip a rung on the ladder and fall back down, but I needed to get back up. And like I said in my talk, I'm going to miss 100% of the shots I don't take. And so I'm not afraid as much anymore to kind of take a risk, put myself out there, be vulnerable, because I'm going to grow and learn if I do fall down. I'm always capable of getting back up. And step two comes into play here, because I know 100% that my higher power has always had my back, and no matter what I go through or where I end up, I'm going to be able to get right back up and keep on going, because I'm 58 and there's not been a time in my life yet that I haven't been able to get back up and keep going. So I have faith.
Hi, I'm Susan, and I was lucky to learn to notice that when I was afraid of something, my fear was way, when I got to the other side of it, I realized my fear was larger than the actual situation. Did that make sense? I learned to get it over with, just jump in and get it over with, because I was always happier on the other side. It wasn't so bad, and I just loved being relieved that it was over. And, you know, in most things, I've discovered that. And I do, I have always been kind of a fearless, reckless cowboy in a way. So that's an issue. But yeah, I like to get it over with. Thanks.
For me, the only way to get over fear is to walk through it. And I take my higher power with me every time. Sometimes in the middle of it, if it gets to be too intense, I allow myself to step back, to take a break until I'm ready to move forward again. That's helped, been very helpful to me. And then when I get to the other side of it, I grow in my self-esteem, and I can celebrate that. And I grow in my faith of God for helping me through it. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to give you a 2-minute break because Robin W. from Illinois has volunteered to speak for 2 minutes on this topic as well. So, Robin?
Hi, guys. Talk about getting, saying yes at the last minute. And, fear of failure, fear of success. I, of course, said yes right away. And it's so good to see you, Floanne. It's been a while. Thank you for your service. I did get a jolt of, yikes, what am I going to talk about? And how am I going to talk about this? And what if I sound like a idiot? And what if I don't say anything, you know, what if I don't say anything profound? Because, you know, my self-esteem is so, it's getting better, but it was so beaten down because of my childhood, my experiences as a kid, that it takes a lot of work for me to get it back. And so right now I have, everything is changing, everything in my life. This is what happens to me. I go along, nothing changes. And then boom, everything, right? So I'm moving. I just got a new sponsor, left my old sponsor. I just took on a service position of treasurer for a gigantic group, which I've never done before. And I don't know. And I'm about to start my fourth step. It's my third time, but the past year has been such a deep dive into my program that I've grown more than I have in the past. Well, my first couple of years that I grew exponentially, and then recently, this past year, again, just exponential growth. I'm so grateful for Zoom and some of these meetings that I found that really, really are getting me to work it. So I have all this stuff going on, and I'm walking my dog, who may have something to say while I'm talking because he's the boss. But at least it's a dog and not another person this time. So I'm walking my dog, and normally my walking my dog time is my feel the earth under my feet, feel the breeze, feel the sunshine, feel the cold breeze, whatever it is. I try and be very, very present in when I'm walking my dog. And all of a sudden this stuff started creeping in about this treasury thing. And it probably would be easier if it was all set up and I was just taking it over, but it's brand new to this meeting. So we're just becoming autonomous, and banks and all kinds of insanity is going on. And of course, disagreements on what the best way to do it is, which I didn't think there would be disagreements if I was treasurer. I would just do what I wanted to do, right? Nobody else really likes that idea. So anyway, I'm obsessing. It starts sneaking in, this obsession. And I got this visual of when I used to go, you know, back in the day when we used to go do stuff, I would go to a concert, be at a concert or a hockey game or something with my husband. and go to get in line in the bathroom, the ladies' room. And I would say to my husband, here, hold my purse. And all of a sudden, for some reason, that visual came to me to give that anxiety, which comes from fear, the obsession, to my higher power. Here, hold my purse. And it was awesome. I mean, this is just a few days ago, and I've used it countless times and shared it with countless people already, because for me, I need visuals. And my higher power is kind enough to give them to me right when I need them. So I hope something profound. I know it wasn't profound, but thank you for the opportunity to grow right here, right now. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Robin. That's great. I'm going to remember that. Here, hold my purse. Fantastic stuff. I have a real quick question for Susan. Susan, what was that reading that you read from at the end of your talk?
It was Courage to Change, and I took the marker out, but it was like
179,
I believe, in Courage to Change.
179. Thank you very, very much. Sure. The next question is directed at Melody, but I'm going to open it up to everybody else as well for the last bit. So how do you keep an open mind without feeling threatened or less than or defensive or needing to defend your view? Good luck.
I think that just comes from having some self-esteem and some confidence and being, wait, before I came to program, I had no idea who I was or what I thought. Or I just followed whatever you thought. And I've through service, I've been able to develop my own values and belief systems and have confidence in it. And that's not to say that sometimes it does get shaken, my confidence in myself, and it does get shaken. But I just rely on my sponsor and my higher power to work through it. And when I'm confident in my beliefs, it makes it much easier for me to be open-minded to other people and to accept their point of view or be open to hearing their point of view and moving forward from there. So thanks.
And then how about we do Phil and then Susan?
Okay. I'm Phil. Used to just kind of go with the flow and sail with the wind. But anyway, eventually I have really strong opinions. And so God gave me two ears and one mouth for a reason. And so I've discovered that I need to become a better listener. And so the best way for me to be open-minded about things is to be a good listener. And I used to, and I still do, because I'm not perfect, of course, but always be processing my answer as somebody's talking to me, you know, like I'm kind of already got my whole response generated while they're still talking. I try and not do that anymore. So I really try and be a better listener and hear people out, let them finish talking, not interrupt them, and not be developing a response while they're still talking. And then actually pausing after I hear what somebody's saying, so that it gives me a time to process what they've said and then generate my response. That whole system there keeps me a little bit more open-minded than I typically am.
Hello, Susan here. And I use listen and learn. And how important is it? And would I rather be right or would I rather be happy? Because growing up, we had to defend ourselves we had to defend our point of view all the time. And, you know, if my opinion is different than somebody else, there's just conflict there. And that was just unpleasant. So yeah, I love those three slogans. I can just let it go. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Wow, we got some really great and deep questions. So fantastic, great, insightful answers. We've only got a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to turn it back over to Mike.
Okay, well, wow, that was wait a minute, I've lost something here. Okay, there we go. All right. So let's thank our speakers again for doing such a great job with the American Sign Language CLAP. I would also like to thank a couple other folks. I would like to thank Floanne for being the moderator today and for being a great chairperson for this committee. I'd like to thank Matt for being stepping up to be the tech person, and Tim for being the backup tech person. And if there are other members of the committee on, I want to thank you all for helping out to put together this workshop. And thank all of you, the participants who came to hear today. Thank you for coming and taking time out of your Saturday. Our next workshop is going to be on Thursday, June the 3rd at 7 p.m. Arizona time. Remember, Arizona does not go on daylight savings time. Apparently, we have plenty of sunshine, but we are on the same time as West Coast time. And the topic will be new perspectives in reaching out, and we'll be looking at Tradition 5. So we hope to see you there and let others know about this great workshop sponsored by the Arizona Al-Anon Family Groups. And we'll close today with the Al-Anon Declaration, if you'll please join me. Let it begin
with me. Let it begin with me.
Let it begin with me.
Even though I'm not a professional.